The NFL made headlines recently with $35 million in research funding to study the effects of concussions and repeated head trauma on professional football players. The past 2 years have brought intense public attention to professional players suffering permanent degenerative brain damage, and it raises some unsettling questions about the safety of youth football. A new study from UC Berkeley adds to a small but growing body of research suggesting that just one season of youth football can cause changes in young players' brains. But are those changes permanent, and what do they mean? Christopher Whitlow is the chief of neuroradiology at Wake Forest University. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Your work has shown that a single season of youth football can cause brain changes in players, what, ages 8 to 13, quite young players. What kinds of changes are we talking about?
Well, what we did was we have all of our football players instrumented with biomechanical sensors so that we can detect how much exposure they've had.
Like how many times they've hit their heads while playing football?
That's correct. And then we use brain imaging to scan their heads before and then after the season of play. And we do that in football players, and then we also have controls who play sports, but just not football. So what we found was that when we looked at the white matter of the brain, which the white matter is kind of like the wires that connect different parts of the brain and transfer information from one area to another. And this one particular tract called the corpus callosum is one of the biggest in the brain and plays a role in transmitting information from the right side of your brain to the left side of your brain. And what we found was that when we compared the football players to non-football players, that we saw some changes in this white matter, some deformations, some areas that looked like they had been kind of elongated a little bit, and then others that looked like they had contracted in the football players compared to controls.
Do we have any idea what those kinds of changes might mean in terms of actual brain function?
No, I don't think we can say what those changes mean. I think it's provocative that we're seeing a change and that this change occurs after one single season of football and that the football players look different than non-football players who also play non-contact sports. But I don't think that we know what these changes necessarily mean. For example, football's a very physical sport. So after a season of football, you might have bruises and little cuts and things that heal just fine. And you never have another problem. But since we only have one season of data, what we don't know is, will these changes go away? Will they persist? And are they cumulative? And could they be some of the first changes in a cascade of change that ultimately results in these changes that the NFL is seeing for certain players? Those answers we don't have.
Now, there's new research from UC Berkeley, also using brain imaging, and they found changes in the gray matter of youth football players. Can you just, you gave us a little bit of a description of the white matter being the wires. What's the gray matter? What's its role? And what might be the significance of seeing changes in both of those types of brain tissue?
Sure. So like you mentioned, the white matter connects all these different gray matter areas together throughout the brain. And all the different gray matter areas have different functions. And so a change in volume could suggest that there could be a change in function, but likely more information is needed to kind of make that assessment.
You've got your study looking at white matter that came out a few years ago, this new study looking at gray matter also finding changes. Is there other research looking at youth football players adding to our understanding of brain changes in these very young football players?
I think so. I think every way that we measure it, whether we use a functional imaging measure and look at brain function, whether we look at blood flow, whether we look at the gray matter of the brain or the white matter of the brain, what is consistent is that we're seeing changes in the brain in our young football players, and that these changes can occur after a single season of play. And I think that there's more that we perhaps don't know, and I think those are the more important questions, which are, you know, do these changes resolve after the season of football? Do they persist, meaning that it changes the developmental trajectory of the brain? And, you know, if it does, are these kinds of changes cumulative after multiple seasons of play? And I think those are the questions that we really want to address and hope to bring attention to this research so that we can try to get more funding to do the studies that are needed to answer those questions. And I think the reason it's so important is because, as you mentioned in your study, there's a lot of work being done, research being done, and research dollars being diverted to study NFL players. But there are about 2,000 active NFL players, 100,000 collegiate players, and about 5 million youth and high school players. It's also likely that most NFL players, and particularly those that are suffering from this disorder that is called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, that these players were also collegiate players, they were also high school players, and they were also youth players. So the question is this neurodegenerative disease that's occurring in the NFL, does it begin very, very early, at the very, very beginning of play? And is it an issue of concussions, multiple concussions, or is it an issue of cumulative exposure to multiple head impacts? These are the questions that we have that we can't answer. And the reason it's important is because if we do find that this exposure leads to changes and puts children at risk, well, then we know that we can intervene and we can do something about it and make the game safer so that we decrease exposure and we maximize all of the health benefits of sports activity and mitigate the risks as much as possible.
Given what we currently know and how much we currently do not know about the impacts of football on young players' brains, do you think youth football is safe, and do those benefits of physical activity and teamwork and confidence and all of the things that come with playing sports, do they balance out the potential risks?
Well, first of all, I think there's risk in anything that you do for all of us, adults and children, whether it's riding your bike, walking down the street, driving a car, there's risks in everything that we do. I think what's imperative is that we understand, characterize, quantify, define the risks, because if we can do that, then we can intervene on it and we can make the sport safer. I think during this time of an obesity epidemic in our youth, I think we need to be promoting physical activity, and in particular, sports-related physical activity, because as you said, there are huge benefits to sports activity, not only all the physical benefits to cardiovascular health and weight control, but there's all sorts of developmental benefits in terms of teamwork, leadership, working cooperatively as a group. All of these things are hugely beneficial to our children and to the developing brain, and I think we really need to promote that. What we need to do is just make sure that sports are played in the safest way possible, and that we can decrease the risks as much as possible and make the sports safe so that we maximize the health benefits and minimize the risks.
You know, I think it's important to point out that there are many football players who go through their entire career and don't suffer chronic traumatic encephalopathy, this permanent neurodegenerative condition. And a lot of people kind of look at this and say, you know, people have been playing football for decades. There's been youth football since we were kids. Why are we only starting to figure out how football impacts players' brains now? Why is this only coming to light now?
I think it's because we're starting to ask those questions, that the NFL has brought to light some issues that can occur from chronic exposure, and that now we're following that trail back to the very beginning, to when children begin to play and begin to be exposed to these head impacts. And the question is it exposure? Is it concussion, or is it exposure? Is this just, you know, we have great guidelines for lead exposure for our children, mercury exposure. We have guidelines for all kinds of exposures that can affect brain development and affect the health of young children. But we have no guidelines for head impact exposure. Is that okay? Is that not okay? Those are the questions that we have, and I think that we need to answer so that we can keep our kids safe and make sports as safe as possible.
You mentioned that we currently have a very small number of studies looking at youth football players, and that you would like to see more follow-up to start to understand whether the changes that you see after one season are permanent or whether they reverse themselves, whether they develop into more severe pathology. Is that kind of long-term follow-up research happening? And if not, why not?
We're starting to do the best we can with the research funding that we have to follow some of the players as long as possible, but it just takes more funding. So we're very invested in pursuing these questions, particularly longitudinally, and following these players for as long as possible to ask those very questions. But we just need more funding. And so it's a little discouraging to us when we see hundreds of millions of dollars going to study NFL players, which is important. I mean, that's very important. But I think we need to also turn our attention to the vast majority of players, which are the youth and high school players, the 5 million youth and high school players that are playing football. And those are just the ones that are in, you know, leagues. There are many others playing in unregulated leagues that we don't know about. So it's a large number of children involved in the sport. And our goal is just to make it as safe as possible so it can be fun and that kids can get all the health benefits of sports-related activity.
To take that even a step further, and you mentioned things like lead exposure, that we do have guidelines for childhood lead exposure, and we also have monitoring programs. When kids go in for their checkups, they get a finger prick and they check lead levels. Do you think that perhaps head trauma should be in there? And is there any way to even track that? I mean, when you're, you know, doing a short-term study, you've got football players wearing sensors on their helmets to see whether or not they hit their head. Is there any way that we could start to monitor head trauma more broadly in children? And do you think that would be worthwhile?
Absolutely. I think the technology is advancing very rapidly in that area in terms of monitoring and detecting head impact exposure. We at Wake Forest School of Medicine have a mouth guard sensor that is kind of like a retainer that can be inserted on the teeth that's very accurate at measuring exposure, developed by my colleague, Dr. Joel Stitzel in biomedical engineering. As these kinds of measurement tools are developed and advanced, I think it's certainly going to be possible on a broader scale to measure exposure and perhaps use those data to develop guidelines.
Dr. Christopher Whitlow is the chief of neuroradiology at Wake Forest University. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Up next, what's wrong with recycling and how to fix it. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.